Reed Martin, it's fair to call the Flying Karamazov brothers legends, isn't it?
They're legends to me. They were inspirations to me.
They're legends in my mind. And we're sitting here with one of them right now, an actual living legend, Sam Williams of the Flying Karamazov brothers, who's here to tell us the history of that august group and how we can all be better jugglers, right?
Sure.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 517, Flying Karamazov Brothers. The Flying Karamazov Brothers are the legendary band of jugglers and comedians founded in 1973 by Paul Maggott and Howard Patterson, who started performing at Ren Fairs and busking in Santa Cruz before touring internationally and performing on Broadway, most notably in their legendary Lincoln Center production of The Comedy of Errors. The K's are a major influence on our work, and after our recent performance in Kent, Washington this fall, we had the great privilege of drinking and chatting with Sam Williams, who, as you'll hear, is sort of the Reed Martin of the Flying Karamazov Brothers. We started our conversation by asking Sam how he joined the Flying K's.
Well, back in the Pleistocene era, I think it was, they needed another guy. When they started out, Howard and Paul, who are respectively Yvonne and Dimitri, snuck under the fence at the Renaissance Fair up east of Seattle and did shows and passed the hat. I was there as a juggler. I was there as a marionettist primarily. I was a marionettist for all of one summer. I also knew how to juggle, so I was wandering around juggling, just being a little bit of color. It was the Falsher Renaissance Fair up by Snoqualmie Falls, for the few that remember that.
And what year was it?
1973. Wow. Since we all juggled, we hung out together, and we became buddies, and when we were in each other's corners of the world, we'd hang out together. And I started a year and change later to do my own street performing, and I performed as Samwise, Master of Balls, Juggler Intraordinaire, and Comparatively Funny Person for an Irish-American. I didn't put all that on the card. Or the area code. That's how new I was.
Do you still go by Samwise? Sometimes you do.
There are friends who call me that, yeah. So I was starting to do similar stuff, juggling and comedy, and they became a foursome in 76 with Tim, Fyodor Karamazov, and Randy, who is Alyosha Karamazov. And after a few years, Randy needed to go on a sabbatical for a while, and so they needed another fourth guy, and he suggested me, actually. Randy was nice enough, and they said, well, yeah, I guess Sam could do it, and they asked me whether I would, and I was about to give up show business. I'd been doing solo stuff for a few years. I just had the one act. I started working with a friend, and we came up with some very good stuff as the Laughing Moon Theater. Bliss Kolb was his name, still is, as a matter of fact. He needed to stop and go earn a living instead. So I didn't want to go back to doing the same old solo stuff I'd done, so I was going to give up showbiz until I wrote a new act, which at my speed would be years. They call out of the blue and say, you want to be a Karamazov? Where do I sign?
Yeah, right.
Kind of like your story with the RSE.
Well, it's your story, too. I mean, if you're the first replacement of the Karamazovs, that makes you the Reed Martin of the Flying Karamazov Brothers.
I think it makes me the Sam Williams.
Yeah, that's what it does. And who were you, and what was your Karamazov name?
Smerdyakov.
Smerdyakov. Okay.
It's spelled just like it sounds.
And how would you describe, because I'll do it badly, how would you describe the Karamazovs' act?
Poorly.
Okay, all right.
It's comedy and juggling. It's taking all of our higher and lower, better and worse skills and putting them on stage. And mostly, as far as I was concerned, we were a comedy team, and everything else we did was stuff that caught the eye or whatever and helped keep people interested. But like yourselves, putting out as many laughs a minute as you can is what we were aiming at.
That's right, LPMs, laughs per minute.
LPMs, laughs per minute. Well, yeah, I mean, I love you guys, and you were definitely an inspiration. And
well, and you went to Clown College. Was that partly inspired by some of their stuff?
Well, yeah, definitely inspired by your work. I don't believe any of you went to Clown College, but I thought of you guys as a comedy team that juggled. And I may not be remembering this correctly, but I would go to see your shows, and you guys mostly worked with three clubs, at least early on. And then at some point, I recall you guys saying, now, we could do more, and then you would do five or seven or something crazy, and then you'd stop, but we don't want to, and then you'd go back to three. Am I remembering that all correctly?
Could be. I don't remember that specifically myself, but we did a little bit of number stuff. We did a 14-club box, two pairs, juggling seven clubs per pair, and crossing in the middle, which happens pretty quickly, so it needs to be relatively accurate. Much more so than I traditionally am. But we always used to say that one performance is worth 10 rehearsals. So after a year of performing, I got to be pretty good at some of those juggling routines.
Sure.
And so you performed at Renaissance Fairs for a while. When did you, I don't know, go legit, if that's the expression? When did you start playing, quote-unquote, real theaters?
Well, just a little before I joined, actually. In 1980, the guys did their last Renaissance Fair, I believe. They did a few years at the Minnesota Renaissance Fair, I believe, and the Columbia Renaissance Fair, is it, outside of D.C.? I think the last one was there, and that was where they met Patch Adams originally, actually. And then I joined in December of that year, and we never quite got back to any.
Well, you started playing legit houses. And is that when you started touring legitimately? I keep using that word, and it's the wrong word.
In theaters instead of passing the hat.
Yeah, right.
Well, right around that same time, the guys were... They did a show, I think, on Navy Pier in Chicago, and I can't remember his name, which is usual with me in names. He was, I think, the tech director for the Goodman Theater, and he talked to them, the Goodman Theater folks, and they talked to the Karamazovs and invited them to play their small house, and so they did that maybe in 79 first, I think, and 80, and then the Goodman Theater was kind enough to mention to the other legitimate theaters, as we call them, they had these guys here who were doing this juggling comedy stuff, and it went really well. And so we started to get work at other theaters from that. And it was just kind of halfway into full bore at the time I joined. We were making up our own gigs half the time and doing theaters half the time.
Well, and in the mid-80s, sort of 87, I think, you did this, what I think of as a kind of a legendary production of The Comedy of Errors, directed by Robert Woodruff. And it was just bringing the... what they called new vaudeville to the old vaudeville of Shakespeare. And it was just this amazing production that played New York, and it was one that I desperately wanted to see and clearly didn't work hard enough. You saw it.
I did. It was great. Absolutely great.
And you can find it almost all of it on YouTube now. And I've watched it many, many times in the last couple of years.
Yes. Was there a question in there?
No, there wasn't.
I love that show myself. When it comes to the bigger shows where we worked with a bunch of other people, that was our best by far. It was a cast of roughly 18 to 20. There were three different productions of it, originally at the Goodman Theater, and then we were invited to the Los Angeles Olympic Arts Festival as America's representatives in classical theater.
Oh!
Which we loved.
That is really legitimate.
And so we were back at the Goodman Theater putting on one show, the Three Musketeers, our own version of the Three Musketeers, set in 1920s Russia. Some amazing parallels, actually. We rehearsed that, got it on its feet, and then we performed that at night, and during the day we rehearsed the production of Comedy of Errors to take it out to Los Angeles. And then the final one was there at Lincoln Center.
And I can't remember it, but it seems like it wasn't like there was just you were the clowns in the foreground and there was all these serious people in the background. They were all sort of clowns and performers, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. I kept telling everybody who was auditioning that we were looking for people who were a lot more talented than we are. they generally, every single one of them had a zillion different skills, we just applied as many as we could fit in there. And Robert, directing, you mentioned Robert Woodruff, a wonderful guy to work with, just amazing, skilled. He'd say, okay, we need something to happen here. And everybody would say, well, I got this thing, we could do this thing, and we could do this thing. He'd kind of look around and go, yeah, that's okay. And just pick and choose. And so we have like the jump rope of death.
Was that jump roping on stilts? What was that? I'm trying to remember the jump rope of death.
That was too high. Mark Sackett and Jeff Raz of Vaudeville Nouveau.
That's right. Really? That's right.
Okay. And Mark's on Jeff's shoulders, and Mark does this really long rope, and Jeff has to do the jumping with Mark standing up on top. And they do like, just three of them or so, and then they walk off and hit the doorway on the way out kind of stuff.
Perfect.
There was one time, maybe it was Robert. Somebody said, if you guys get that 10 shows in a row, I'm buying you pizza. And they got it most shows, but it was hard to get every single time.
Yeah.
And finally, I'm backstage at that point, and I hear them do that, and then I hear, pizza!
Never offer actors free food. Was Ovner in that, Ovner the Eccentric? He was in the show too, wasn't he?
It was part of the original idea. Gregory Mosher, artistic director for Lincoln Center, and brought the show there, but before he was artistic director for the Goodman.
Awesome.
And he talked to us and said, we want to do a show with you guys, Karamazovs and Ovner, and like a play, maybe. And we have to have a classical show in the season each year. And we were thinking maybe you guys could do a Shakespeare show. And they thought either Midsummer Night's Dream or A Comedy of Errors. And the two sets of twins was a lot of fun to work with.
Hello, folks. This is Mike McShane, and you're listening deeply and completely to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Yes.
Where can you RSC the RSC? We just completed our 24-city, 17-state tour of the special election edition of The Complete History of America Abridged. I hope you saw it. It was really fun. And in 2 weeks, we head off to China to perform the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged in Beijing, Shanghai, Nanjing, and Xiamen, while at the same time beginning a U.S. tour of the ultimate Christmas show Abridged in the U.S., with performances in Ohio, North Carolina, Massachusetts, Colorado, and Maryland. It's a Christmas miracle. Then in February 2017, we'll begin a four-month UK tour of William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information.
Reed and I have talked about this expression, the new vaudeville, and
some people like it and some people don't. I think Bill Irwin especially doesn't really like it.
Bill Irwin satirizes it, and sometimes we get described at it. But were you aware, conscious of the fact that you were being described as part of this movement, and what, if anything, did it mean to you?
Well, yes, we were conscious of it. Paul once told me that he was pretty sure that we were actually, if I'm remembering him correctly, that we were actually the group about which that phrase was first used. Mel Gussow, a critic at the New York Times, a very good one. He rarely made any mistakes in quoting or anything, which is rare for newspaper reporting, even though they all have the best of intentions. Anyway, I think he referred to he may have said vaudeville nouveau first, or nouveau vaudeville, and then, he was talking about Bill Irwin, talking about us in various pieces, and it must have been somebody else too, but I'm not sure. I think it was one of ours for which they first used the term, and we went, well, yeah, I guess kind of. I mean, we're generally doing the whole show by ourselves, so it's not like the old vaudeville in that regard, but we definitely love and admire the spirit and style of the old funny guys, and tried to bring it to life in our own way.
When I think of new vaudeville and our stuff, yeah, you're right, there's not a whole series of shorter acts, but you take the show on the road for years and years and do it hundreds of times, and it's constantly changing and evolving and getting polished and sharper. I think of the stories of, Groucho just tweaking one word in a punchline, or the intonation, or Jack Benny trying to slap his cheek with four fingers, with two fingers, with three, and over years and years, three is funny, and just that sort of thing of honing it over time.
Right. So, well, and were you, I guess, that it was never conscious for you guys to say, you know what we should do? We should take the old forms of vaudeville and apply it in a new way. You were just doing the tricks right?
I think Paul, at the very least, and probably Howard as well, maybe all of them, had notable familiarity with vaudeville of old, and I suspect there was a certain amount of consciousness in that choice, but it's also absolutely true that we were just doing what made us laugh,
right.
And a bunch Paul and Howard were co-valedictorians at UC Santa Cruz, so they're a couple of very smart guys who were just always making each other laugh anyway. And we all like to do that, don't we?
I have to ask this question. If they were UC Santa Cruz, did they take a class with Tom Lehrer, who's on the faculty there?
Howard had him for statistics, actually.
Wow.
And it wasn't the cut-up or anything, I think, during the class. But, yeah, he's acquainted with him.
Yes. Juggling and Cheap Theatrics, what I remember, and it may have been the opening of the show, where one of you would rappel in, and then the second, and the third, and the fourth, and then a dummy would drop from the ceiling, and the audience would gasp, and then you'd walk in from the wing, and it just killed me.
It was actually that routine. It's called whoosh, because we run down the aisles, clacking our clubs together, and yelling whoosh, and we're going all the way up on the stage, and we twirl around in circles, and we jump up in the air, and we land on our feet, and go whoosh somewhere in this. We finish with the whoosh, and then we jump in the air, land on our feet, and it's just silent juggling. So big build up, silence, and that worked just lovely. And then we did Comedy of Errors, and we came up with that joke of the dummy falling down for Comedy of Errors. I think.
Yeah.
He was one of the stagehands named him Solly the Dolly. So it's a dummy that would wear my clothes and have a beard drawn on, and it happened fast enough that it fooled people, and everybody would be startled and scared and then laugh a lot.
Now, out of that Comedy of Errors in Los Angeles, is that what led to you guys being in the movie Jewel of the Nile?
No, that did not Let's see, when did that happen? 85, we shot that. So it must have been 84. Same year, we were at... it was a theater in is it called Westwood?
Yeah.
It had a furniture store in front, and the lobby was through a furniture store, or was a furniture store. And it's some other theater now, I think. I can't remember. Anyway, heard from Michael Douglas later, or Danny. I don't know. Uh-huh. All these movie stars will collect to me.
Yeah, Danny DeVito gets mistaken for everybody. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Especially Arnold Schwarzenegger. And, anyway, Michael and Danny and some guy from 20th Century came and saw the show, and I think it was Danny telling me the story, and Michael said, we should probably have these guys in the next movie, don't you think? And so they called and asked if we wanted to be in it, and we said, oh, sure, we're interested, and they sent us the script, and we're on page one, and we were throughout the movie a much more significant presence in the original script. It was a bait and switch, I tell you. And we were much more hippie-like, Sufi Arab or Berber or whatever warriors than we ended up being. And, you know, they rewrote the script a couple of times. Somebody noticed that they had all these very high-paid movie stars in it, and they should probably have them on screen more often. And so they rewrote it as was appropriate. And we became a much smaller part of the thing, but it was fun.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. We continue to chat with Sam Williams about the further adventures of the Flying K's, including tales of opening for both Frank Sinatra and the Grateful Dead. And I'll post those stories on future episodes of the podcast. Until then, send us your favorite items to juggle via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Austin Titchener. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, Lost Moscow Tier Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Jessica Raposo. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to fellow comic legend Mike McShane. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 517 1551st of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Listeners out there, is the lesson that we're learning is that juggling is the greater path to Hollywood riches and glory?
No, that's the thing that gets in the way.
Oh, got it.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less.